The Genesis mission is the most important AI policy story Americans aren't talking about right now. And the reason I believe that we're not talking about it is because of how deliberately confusing the whole thing is. The whole apparatus is just beyond. And it's being sold as the Manhattan Project for AI.
A new revolution begins. One guided not by competition alone, but by curiosity, imagination, and the belief that discovery is the truest form of progress.
The federal government's big bet on beating China in artificial intelligence, right? The thing that's going to keep America competitive. And why shouldn't it? You know, because we all know how much this administration loves investing in science. Right? While the federal government was announcing the Genesis mission, they were also cutting the budget for the actual federal science research by 13%. And this cut, by the way, was wrapped inside the same press release as the announcement. So they were defunding the thing while they were funding the thing, which makes sense, and it only gets more confusing from there. And we're going to get into all of the funding in a second here, but I should warn you before going in that this story is incredibly layered, to put it nicely, and it's been fragmented in a way, I think, across all of these databases and splintered across the splinter net in a way that's designed to take a really long time to unravel, if at all. Or at least it was designed to waste enough of our time that we'd give up before figuring out what is actually being built. Yep, unfortunately for them, I have the exact personality disorder required for this kind of assignment. And I already have a Larry Ellison dossier. So, hey, I'm Dre, and welcome to the Dre Dossier. And today we're going to be unpacking the Genesis mission. Well, at least part of it, the first part of it, which I can already tell is going to be a multi-part series because every time I thought I was at the bottom of the story, another basement. I also have a written article paired with this video over on my Substack, the Dre Dossier, if you're watching this on YouTube, with all of my sources linked at the bottom of that article. And because this is coming out on Mother's Day, I wanted to give a very happy Mother's Day to my mom. You know, she has spent her entire life giving so much to everyone around her, and I'm so grateful that I got to even inherit a bit of her courage and her curiosity and apparently her audacity. Yeah, because I'm out here on the internet asking what octogenarian tech billionaires are doing with federal data. Anyways, every time after she watches one of my videos, she'll always say that I'm her hero, which is ridiculous because she's definitely mine. So anyway, beautiful moment, blah, blah, blah. Let's go ahead and ruin it with Larry Ellison, shall we? Okay, so in order to understand the Genesis mission, you first need to understand what the Department of Energy does, the DOE. And in order to understand what the DOE does, you need to understand the Manhattan Project. So it's all the same story, lucky us. Here's what you need to know about the Manhattan Project for our purposes. So in 1942, the United States was racing Nazi Germany to build the atomic bomb. And in order to do that, the federal government decided to build three secret cities from scratch. This was Oak Ridge, Tennessee, Los Alamos, New Mexico, and Hanford, Washington. Now, none of these secret cities appeared on maps, by the way, and there were tens of thousands of people who lived and worked in these secret cities, and they weren't allowed to tell anyone where they were, what they were doing, or even that these cities existed at all. Hell, most of these workers didn't even know what they were building. They had been recruited into a project that was so classified that not even the people inside could see the whole picture of it. And that picture, of course, was the Manhattan Project. So the TLDR here is that they were building bombs, the bombs got used, and then the war ended, but the factories did not go away. Because after the war had ended, the federal government handed the Manhattan Project over to a new civilian agency, and they called it the Atomic Energy Commission. And over the course of 30 years, that agency got split apart and reorganized, and by 1977, that whole operation had been folded into a new cabinet-level department called the Department of Energy. So it was all the same labs, the same buildings, the same contractors running them, just a new name on the door. Now, the Department of Energy does a lot of different kinds of work, okay? A lot of important work. They handle federal energy policy, they manage the electrical grid, they run Strategic Petroleum Reserve. They fund everything from solar research to fusion. And that is the work of thousands of scientists and federal workers doing real, meaningful research every single day. But energy is only a small part of what this agency does. The DOE also runs the American Nuclear Weapons Program and the 17 national laboratories that descended from those original wartime cities. That's Argonne, Oak Ridge, Los Alamos, Brookhaven, Lawrence Livermore, to name a few. And it's within those labs that the story truly lives. You see, because here is where it gets kind of interesting. Because the labs are owned by federal government. So the land, the buildings, the supercomputers, all of the data, right? All of it sits on federal property and gets paid for by taxpayer money. But the labs aren't actually run by the federal government. See, they're operated by private companies under contracts worth billions of dollars. And this has been a thing for quite some time now, right? So like Argonne is run by a private company called UChicago Argonne LLC, which is basically the University of Chicago setting up an LLC specifically to hold that contract. Oak Ridge is run by a partnership called UT Battelle. And Los Alamos is run by something called Triad National Security LLC, a partnership between the University of California, Battelle, and Texas A&M. So the federal government pays for the bills, right? But these private companies come in and they run the day-to-day operations within the labs. They manage the contracts with outside partners, and then they decide how labs participate in federal programs like the Genesis mission. And this setup goes all the way back to the Manhattan Project. In 1942, the government needed thousands of scientists, and they needed them fast. You know, federal hiring couldn't move that quick, and federal pay scales couldn't compete with what universities and private industry could offer. So they contracted with universities and private companies to do the recruiting and management for them. And it's that arrangement that still runs today for a number of reasons, honestly. I mean, the deeper reason is that science and government don't really fit together cleanly, I suppose. Well, I mean, think about it, because like science needs all this flexibility, right? The risk tolerance, freedom to fail, and competitive pay for top talent. Meanwhile, it's not exactly a secret that federal bureaucracy was built for the opposite of that. So I guess at some point, someone just decided that the private institutions would handle the day-to-day, and then in exchange, the public would stay in charge of the mission, right? Keep the eyes on the mission. Easy peasy. You got public funding, public ownership, private operation, and public oversight. What could possibly go wrong? At the end of the day, it's a very complicated relationship between the government and science, you know, and it always has been. And the reason I bring all of this up is to say that I feel like this was inevitable, right? Like we were building towards this moment in many ways, this Genesis mission moment, because how could you not eventually reach a point where you breed resentment between the two parties in a deal like that? I mean, you're fundamentally agreeing to break the normal rules because you acknowledge that both of you have shortcomings, right? And the government can't run science the way science needs to be run, and the private side can't fund science at this scale alone. So, you know, you shake hands and hope that it holds. And then 80 years later, the private side sees the government as red tape and slowing innovation down, and the government sees the private side as dangerous and exploitative. And honestly, both sides are kind of right. But here's what makes this moment different, because the oversight piece, you know, of the original deal, the part that was supposed to keep all of this balanced, has been completely dismantled. I mean, hell, in April, Trump fired all 22 members of the National Science Board, and the same pattern hit advisory committees and the National Science Foundation and the EPA and the CDC and the FDA. I mean, the federal scientific advisory infrastructure that was supposed to be keeping independent oversight was being torn down at the same time the Genesis mission was being built. So now in that stack that had the public funding, the public ownership, the private operation, but the public oversight, take away the oversight and then layer the largest AI companies in the world on top of it. And this is where the Genesis mission comes in. On November 24th, 2025, Donald Trump signed an executive order in which he established something called the Genesis mission. And the order mandates that the DOE harness federal scientific data sets to train artificial intelligence models and create these autonomous AI agents that can do scientific research on their own. And the announcement included 24 private partners, a few of them being Oracle, Microsoft, Google, NVIDIA, OpenAI, Palantir, and Anthropic. And the mission identified 26 science and technology challenges that these AI agents would tackle, ranging anywhere from cancer to research to fusion to energy to quantum computing. And the official pitch was that this program will double the American scientific productivity within a decade and will have twice as much data in a decade. That's the version of the Genesis mission that ran in the press. But then when I started researching the Genesis mission, the clean version fell apart almost immediately. The problem is that the program isn't called one single thing. Like, it's not just called the Genesis mission. Oh, no, that'd be too simple. It's called like 10 different things. There's the Genesis mission itself. Then there's the American Science and Security Platform, not to be confused with the American Science Cloud, which is also part of the Genesis mission. Then there's the Transformational AI Models Consortium. But that's a separate organization from the other consortium called the Genesis Mission Consortium, which is now somehow the same thing as the Genesis mission. Like, all of these names each have their own websites, by the way, government websites. And each website has its own announcements, its own partner lists, its own funding documents. None of them link to each other cleanly, and most of them contradict each other on basic facts about what the program actually is. I mean, I spent days just trying to map which name went with which website and which initiative and who was funding what. And look, this isn't my first tech bro rodeo, okay? I know how this architecture is designed. It's designed to waste my time. Because when something is called 10 different names across 10 different websites, then no journalist can summarize it in a tweet. No congressional staffer can audit it without months of work. No member of the public can follow what's actually being built. until now. Well, I say that, but the funding mechanism, that is even worse, if you can believe it. So it looked simple enough, right? The DOE announced $320 million in the Genesis mission investment in December of 2025. I went to go find that money, and it turned out to be split across master contracts to the national labs, other transaction agreements, which were meant to bypass federal procurement rules, these in-kind contributions from private partners that don't actually have any dollar values attached, some cloud credits from Oracle, because of course, that's how he pays for everything now, and some existing appropriations that got relabeled as Genesis funding, even though it was already funding for the DOE. Yeah, and it's that last category that's really the tell, because most of the $320 million was already being spent on programs that existed before the Genesis mission was actually announced. And remember that 13% cut to basic science I mentioned at the top of this video? Yeah, that cut was buried inside the same press release as the Genesis announcement. This is the press release I was referring to. So as far as the public can tell, the Genesis mission has never actually seen any new investment, at least none that have a receipt attached to it. I mean, it was always just a redirection of resources that already existed, just kind of dressed up in this new language that looked like something much bigger. Which got me thinking, if the Genesis mission isn't really any new investment, then why are we doing it? What has all this been for? Like, why all this fanfare and this much fragmentation just for what? China? Is that the official answer? Yeah, well, I guess everything in federal AI policy right now anchors on the idea that China is racing us to artificial general intelligence and they're beating us. And that's why we started the CHIPS Act. Well, kind of. You know, we still send them chips. You know, the export controls on semiconductors. Well, I think we still send them semiconductors too, I'm pretty sure. This is a conversation for another time. The rare earth minerals push, the bipartisan support for federal AI infrastructure. All of that gets justified by this China threat. The Manhattan Project framing itself is kind of doing a lot of the work here. You know, the original Manhattan Project was about beating Nazi Germany to the bomb, and this new one is supposedly about beating China to AI. And by the way, you can take the China threat seriously and still notice when this is being used as a cover for something else. In fact, Taylor Lorenz, a tech journalist with Wired Magazine, recently reported that dark money-funded China content has been showing up across American media and wellness magazines and conservative ecosystems. And I actually find the wellness magazine's angle really interesting, so clock it in your brain for a second if you can, because it's going to come up here in a little bit. And so within that framing, you have to understand that the threat narrative is being amplified from undisclosed actors with their own interests. And it's honestly a whole video unto itself that I'll make probably at some point, because yeah, the China ties are really fascinating when it comes to technology and data sovereignty, or lack thereof, you know. But yeah, everybody should go read the Wired piece. It's a really great piece of journalism. For now, the thing to notice is the pattern. You've got a federal program that's structurally hard to follow. It's funded through mechanisms designed to avoid public oversight, it's justified through a threat narrative that has its own integrity problems, and when you see a pattern start to form, the question isn't to ask whether the cover story is true. The question is to ask what's underneath it. Well, luckily that one's pretty easy to answer. It's data. Data is underneath it. Specifically, the most valuable scientific data and personal data that the federal government holds. Let's start with the genomes, shall we? Because the Department of Veterans Affairs runs a program called the Million Veterans Program. That's right, a million American veterans have already had their full genome sequenced as part of it. I mean, this is the largest genomic database in human history, and the data is all stored at Argonne National Laboratory. And then, of course, there's the cancer registry. Every cancer case in the United States gets reported to a federal database. And it's for a good cause. You know, the Oak Ridge National Laboratory has been integrating that data with imaging and treatment records for years now. And then there's the real-time biological imaging. You know, the advanced photon source at Argonne is the most advanced biological imaging instrument in the world. It can see protons, viruses, and molecular structures at the atomic resolution. And then there's the Federal Health Record System. So on top of the genomes and the cancer data and the biological imaging, Oracle got a contract from the Pentagon years ago to run a completely separate program. It's an electronic health records platform that covers 9.6 million Americans, including active duty service members, veterans, and their families, and their dependents. The platform launched in 2017, so it's currently being deployed inside the National Security Agency, the NSA, and it's also currently being migrated onto Oracle's cloud. Now, if you had to take a wild guess at what the name of that program is, what would it be? Would you guess MHS Genesis? Yeah. Subtle, right? Very normal. No notes from me. Sounds great. Now, I want to be clear about what MHS Genesis actually does and what the scope of that is, okay? Because I think it matters for the last part of this conversation. So this isn't just billing data. This isn't just insurance records. This is the actual clinical system that doctors, nurses, and military medical staff use to document all of their patient care. That's every diagnosis, every prescription, every lab test, every image study, every mental health visit, every immunization, every deployment-related health screening. All of it for nearly 10 million Americans going back almost a decade, sitting on a single Oracle-operated platform that connects more than 700 military medical facilities around the world. It is widely known as the most comprehensive longitudinal health data set the federal government has ever assembled in a single system, and it's currently being moved into the National Security Agency. And that should bother you, if it doesn't already, because the NSA is not a healthcare provider. They don't treat patients, they don't run clinics. So when the Pentagon's clinical health records platform gets repositioned inside the NSA, sounds a lot less like medical infrastructure and more like something being used for surveillance. I mean, this is the piece that ties everything together. The genomes, the cancer data, the atomic level biological imaging, the clinical health records from nearly 10 million Americans. Because despite whatever PR campaign they'll feed you, once you wire all of that into one single AI system, you don't get just a cancer treatment recommendation anymore. You get the newfound ability to monitor populations at a biological resolution. And you get the ability to track health behavior and identity at a level of detail that no monitoring program in American history has ever had access to. Sorry, are we trying to beat China or are we trying to become China? Or does it even matter? Because that's what China's doing to their population and has been doing. And some of you may remember in my Stargate LLC video, I reported on Imaging AI, the Israeli company tied to Unit 8200 that, yes, Larry Ellison has invested in, and how that opens up so many doors to building AI systems for medical imaging analysis with national security applications. And the thing about Israeli biotech is it doesn't only exist in Israel. It exists here, very much so. It's part of this broader ecosystem that we're starting to see take shape now with commercial medical AI and this intelligence community surveillance running on the same platforms, the same infrastructure with the same partners and the same data. And the Genesis mission in many ways is the federal layer to that that makes this convergence possible. That, and there's also the privatization piece, of course. I mean, the largest AI companies in the world want their hands on this data, and they want their hands on it in a very particular way. Meaning they don't really want to pay to build it because the public has already paid time and money to build it. What they really want more so is the right to train their AI models on it and then own the output of those models, the IP of whatever comes out of those models. Yeah, so they want to walk into a system that the public has funded for nearly 80 years, train commercial AI products on it, and then sell those products back to the public. Which seems, when you say it out loud, like not a great deal for us now, does it? But that's the loop, baby. That's the AI Ouroboros. You paid to build the data. They get to own the thing that they build with that data. And then they get to make you pay again to buy what they built with that data that was your data that you originally paid for. Crazy how this works. And the Genesis mission is the federal layer that makes all of that legal too. And it's through a couple of different tricky contracts, which we'll get into in another video. But in the meantime, we're going to go ahead and push into the next question I had, which was, okay, so you've got all this federal data. What are you going to feed it into? The answer is supercomputers. Plural. Yeah, Genesis mission involves a whole new portfolio of new federal supercomputers being built across all of the national labs. You've got Equinox at Argonne, Lux at Oak Ridge, Mission and Vision at Los Alamos. And then you've got the largest supercomputer of them all, the super supercomputer, if you will. And that one is being built by none other than Oracle. It's called Solstice, and according to reporting, it's going to run on 100,000 NVIDIA GPUs and draw from 200 megawatts of continuous power. And to put that into perspective for you, it'll be roughly twice the size of the current world record holder for AI supercomputers. And Solstice is designed for autonomous AI agents, which are the AI systems that take actions on their own. You know, they can run an experiment, analyze the results, design the next experiment, execute it, all without humans in the loop. And Solstice is also classified capable, meaning that it can run intelligence community workloads on the same hardware that, I don't know, it runs open scientific research, perhaps. Now, according to research done by Glenn Lockwood, who runs this great site, oh, this beautiful site called Glenn's Digital Garden, where he tracks all of the federal supercomputer projects and he makes it really digestible and easy to track, and he just breaks down in no nonsense what the Genesis mission is and isn't. Everybody go follow him on X, go give him some love, because Glenn Lockwood, you rocked my world with this. Thank you so much. It was so confusing before I found your website. And by the way, he's not just some rando. He used to do this work for a living. He spent 7 years at the Department of Energy designing storage systems for federal supercomputers, spent 3 more years at Microsoft on the largest AI training systems in Azure, and he stepped away from those roles, and now he's a senior technical strategist. So on his page Solstice, dated April 2nd, 2026, he wrote one sentence that made everything click into place for me. So regarding Solstice, he wrote, quote, "It is unclear who is paying for this, where it will be cited, or exactly what science research and innovation this is being built for," end quote. I'm sorry, can we just back up to that word really quick? Cited? He has no idea where it will be cited? So you're telling me that not even a senior technical professional who used to design these systems can tell you where Solstice is going to live, who's paying for it, or what it's actually going to be used for? Perhaps some of you see where I'm going with this. So upon further investigation, I found that right now, the official story is that Solstice is being built at the Argonne National Laboratory in Illinois. See, but the problem is, given the size of this super duper supercomputer, it doesn't sound like Argonne can fit it in their laboratory there. And plus, they already have another supercomputer on that campus that takes up most of that space. The Solstice would need roughly 10 times the floor space, more than twice the power, and an entirely new cooling infrastructure to accommodate it. Dare I say it would probably be better off if it were, I don't know, underground? Perhaps? I wonder, where on earth could you possibly fit a supercomputer that's processing population scale health and genomic data, runs autonomous AI agents, has classified workload capability, and needs to sit somewhere within operational control of the executive branch? Oh, I don't know, perhaps in a hardened bunker, you know, somewhere that has a nice, how do you say, shed on top. Now stick with me, all right? Think about the lawsuit over the East Wing demolition. One of the administration's last-ditch arguments for keeping the underground construction from being paused was to say that there is a medical facility being built down there. Remember that? And technically that might be true, but technically true is where I find a lot of very bad ideas get put on a suit. Yeah, because I think you and I both know that having autonomous AI agents just run across all of our genomic data is not the same as having a doctor diagnose us with a disease, you know? And so this is my hypothesis, of course, but when I first heard medical facility, my brain didn't just jump to hospital or clinic. I mean, it may mean a place where medicine becomes infrastructure, where health data becomes national security data, where the body becomes the battlefield. And so this is why the Genesis mission matters, okay? And for a lot of other reasons we didn't even get to talk about in this video. And it's also why the ballroom matters. And I think we just got a little closer to finding out what it's covering.
Because we record, we're constantly recording, watching and recording everything that's going on. Citizens will be on their best behavior because we're constantly recording and reporting everything that's going on.